But first, Arizona's courts are making some big changes aimed at making it easier for victims of domestic violence to get orders of protection against their abusers. For a long time, if you wanted to get a protective order, you had to go to a court to ask a judge for it and then figure out how to serve it yourself, essentially. And as a result, courts were issuing more than 42,000 orders a year on average, and just about half of them were actually being served. The new system, dubbed the Arizona Protective Order Initiation and Notification Tool, or AZ Point, allows victims to fill out all of the paperwork online, and then the court passes it on to a serving agency automatically. To find out more about how this changes things for those facing domestic violence, I spoke with ASU social work professor Jill Messing. She told me while we might have all heard them called restraining orders on TV, an order of protection actually does many things.
So an order of protection can do many things. The thing that most people think about when they think about an order of protection is keeping an abuser away from the victim. So it can keep them away from protected places like a victim's home, a school, or a job. But it can also do several other things. So, for example, it can be used to remove firearms from an abuser. Sometimes children are included on orders of protection, so it can keep abusers away from children. And it also has provisions about no abuse. So essentially, if violence occurs while someone has an order of protection, there are additional legal sanctions that can take place.
How enforceable are they?
Sure. So if the order of protection is served, then there should be a record of that with the court. But if an abuser comes close to the victim, right, is within kind of that range where he is not supposed to be, then the victim would need to call the police in order to let them know that the order of protection was violated.
I want to talk about some of the issues with this, right? The way in which orders of protection in Arizona up until just now were served and the process you had to go through in which to get one. How did it work?
So someone who needed an order of protection would go to the court, and they would probably spend quite a bit of time filling out those papers at the courthouse, wait to see a judge, and then they would talk to the judge about their situation. So they would tell the judge why they needed the order of protection. And then if the judge were to grant that order of protection, and the judge can decide on provisions at that time, so what the order of protection is going to do for the victim. If the judge were to grant the order of protection, then the victim would have that piece of paper. So they'd have that order of protection, and they would need to find a way to get that piece of paper to the abuser so that he knows that there's an order of protection.
So they'd have to essentially figure out how to serve it themselves.
Correct, yes. And they could ask the law enforcement to serve it, for example, but there was no automatic process by which that occurred.
Right. How did this play out in terms of challenges for women in domestic violence situations, for example?
Sure. So orders of protection are for intimate partner violence. So we're thinking about women who are scared enough of an abusive partner that they want to keep that partner away from them. And now they have this order of protection and they're supposed to go near their partner to get that served. And so that could be extremely dangerous. People could also ask, loved ones to serve that order, which would be dangerous for the loved one. And then if they were able to get the police to serve it, that would be kind of best case scenario. Mm-hmm. But in my understanding, that was sometimes difficult to get to happen.
Because it wasn't required.
Exactly.
Are there examples that you can think of cases where it just never happened then? Like you'd get the order of protection and then it was never served because of these challenges. And then is it enforceable then?
It's not enforceable. So absolutely that would happen. So when that victim leaves the court with that piece of paper that's an order of protection, it has to be served for it to be enforceable. And so if she was never able to get that order of protection served, she spent all of this time working on this legal remedy that then is not enforceable.
Okay. So now there is a big change. The legislature passed a bill a few years ago, and now the system is in place through the courts to do this differently. Now you can file it online, and there will be a system in place to serve these orders for women, for survivors. When you read through a law like this and the changes that it makes, what's your reaction?
Sure. I think it's great. I think anything that we can do to help survivors make these processes easier are really important. It used to be that they would go to the courthouse and spend quite a bit of time there filling out that order of protection, mm-hmm. whereas now you could gather that information and fill out the order of protection information online and then take it to the court. So that will be really helpful in terms of saving time for survivors. And then, of course, as we talked about, that service piece is really important.
Right, right. There also used to be an issue, even with the orders of protection that were delivered, that were served, there was a big delay often in how long that would take to get to happen, and that could cause safety issues. This new law now will require that there's a service within 72 hours or some sort of notification within 72 hours. Does that time period make a big difference?
Absolutely. So if you think about, right, you have a survivor, she's afraid of her abuser, she goes through this whole process of getting an order of protection, and then maybe she's waiting weeks to find out if that order was served. And maybe during that interim, she's not having a lot of communication, so she might not know what's going on. So being able to at least know that the order was served within 72 hours or have information about what's going on with that process, I would think would place a lot of ease on someone.
Yeah. So big picture, these are seemingly incremental changes, but will probably make a big difference, especially when you look at the, you know, success rate or lack thereof of serving orders of protection up until now. What difference do you hope this makes?
So I would hope that it makes a difference for survivors in terms of their ability to actually utilize this resource, right? So we could have people who maybe wouldn't have been able to get an order of protection before or wouldn't have thought that it was a feasible option for them, and now they do think it's a feasible option. We also would have people before who were getting an order of protection and then it was unenforceable. So they'd gone through all of those steps, but it never kind of came to the point where they could use that protection. I also think it's really important that as we think about survivors of domestic violence generally, orders of protection aren't going to be the solution for everyone. So orders of protection tend to keep an abuser away. You actually can have orders of protection that are just no abuse orders, so mm-hmm. they don't keep an abuser away, but they do enhance sanctions for abuse. And so I think it's really important as we're thinking about domestic violence survivors to understand that different people will try to protect themselves in different ways, and then it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So, well, I think that this is really important for women who want to use orders of protection, and it makes that a lot easier. I think it's also really important to recognize that there are a range of services out there.
All right. Jill Messing is an associate professor in ASU School of Social Work. Jill, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.